Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. I'm John Harrison. Two cloned long-tailed macaques were born in December in China about 7 weeks ago using the same technique called single-cell nuclear transfer, or SCNT, as Dolly the sheep. This technique involves transferring a cell nucleus to a donated egg cell that is then prompted to develop into an embryo. This is not the first time that primates have been successfully cloned, however, it is the first time that they've been cloned using this technique. Now, this development has been talked about as bringing the prospect of cloned human beings a lot closer. But will it really? Joining the program to talk about this research and perhaps put it all in a wider context is Professor Darren Griffin from the School of Biosciences at the University of Kent. Welcome to the program, Professor Griffin.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, if we can please start off by perhaps letting us know a bit of the background for this. What traditions has this new technique come from, and why is it significant, if it is significant?
Yes, I think the first thing to say is it's a technical advance. The received wisdom was the cloning in the way that we understand it, which is by the Dolly the sheep approach, if you can call it that, has largely been successful in all sorts of mammals, so pigs, horses, cats, dogs, and of course sheep. But until recently, the received wisdom was it just wouldn't work or wouldn't work very well in primates. Now, I don't think, looking at the methods, they did anything particularly different other than try variants on the same technique until they very impressively got it right.
Okay, but surely there is a difference as far as I have to say excuse me because I'm obviously not an expert, but surely the Dolly the sheep, if one could say, technique involves taking a cell, a nucleus, and putting it into another cell, whereas the traditional techniques would be more on the side of splitting cells, as in twins. So they are they not completely different?
Yes. So if, generally speaking, when we talk about cloning, I think it's fair to say that we picture the Dolly the sheep approach. And as you quite rightly say, it involves taking the nucleus from a committed cell, removing that from the cell itself, and then implanting that into an egg or in a very early embryo in the hope that that embryo will divide and then ultimately form a fetus. What you've described in addition is sometimes referred to as cloning, but quite in the same way as people understand the term to mean. So you're quite right that that involves basically like twinning, but just promoting the process by taking an embryo and splitting it in half. So I think it's important to get our definitions right, as you point out there. And I think, really speaking, although in your introduction, you said that it's not the first time that primates are being cloned, then in that sense, that's correct. But I think when we talk about cloning, we talk about the somatic cell nuclear transfer approach. In this case, the thing that they got to work was by using embryonic cells, so cells from a fetus, and that was the two monkeys that we've seen all over the newspapers and so on. There were also a couple of other monkeys that they started off with an adult cell that didn't last more than a couple of days. So it's still relatively early days if this work is to continue.
And it was after 78 attempts, I think, wasn't it? It's the 79th attempt.
Absolutely. And this is the thing when we get onto the question of should we be cloning humans and is this a step towards it? Now, on the one hand, you would say that given these are primates and we ourselves are primates, then technically you might argue that it is a step towards the approach. But in humans, of course, we have all sorts of other issues. What you've just alluded to a moment ago is the fact that it's a really very unsuccessful technique. So one of the things that you don't really want to do is start experimenting and essentially producing babies that could be severely affected or not last more than a couple of days in order just to prove a point. The second reason is it really is quite dangerous. And then the third reason is, well, it's probably a little bit pointless. Now, there would certainly be a market for this if you put out on the internet, would you like to be cloned? I'm sure you would get a number of takers that would pay an awful lot of money to get themselves cloned. Realistically, what would the end result be? Someone who was a little bit like the person from which they were cloned in the first place. And I think that is perhaps the main reason for not going down the line of human cloning, because other than the fact that it's dangerous and unsuccessful, you could possibly work on that so it was less so, one might argue.
Yeah.
But why on earth would you want to?
Yeah. Now, you've said an awful lot there, and I'd like to split what you just said up, please, to unpack it, if you like,
of course,
into two separate questions. The first one would be the danger aspect. I mean, we tend to forget, us sort of non-expert, that Dolly died, didn't she, quite young? You know, as sheep go, I mean, sheep can live to 11 or 12 years of age, but okay, I accept that that's
a healthy sheep.
But she died six and a half years. Age 6 and a half is quite young for sheep, isn't it?
Yeah. And to be honest, in some ways, that's still a little bit of a mystery, partly because in the last year, my colleague Kevin Sinclair went back to, not to Dolly herself, but sheep that were cloned from the same cell line, and to ask the question, how well have they aged in, well, it's 20 years since Dolly, it was maybe about 12 years since these sheep, and it seems that they had aged normally, so clearly things are going on that in some cases the clones seem to be fine. The pigs, as I understand it, were fine, the cats and dogs were fine, but certainly it was the case with these monkeys that the ones that were cloned from adult cells, which if someone were cloning themselves, they presumably would be an adult from the outset. And that seems to be somewhat of a problem.
Yeah.
In order to do this, you would have to have an awful lot of unsuccessful attempts to try and improve it. And that means babies dying. And I don't think any of us would be very comfortable with that.
Right. It reminds me of the original story of the fly. You know that story where the professor tries to duplicate himself and he goes into the disintegration machine and a fly just happens to be there and with him, you know, and he comes out the other end slightly different, you know, than what was planned. But I read that there's something called shorter telomeres, and there's a piece of DNA coding that they found as a result of cloning. Apparently the DNA structure is altered and the end of chromosomes is affected as they shorten the cell divide.
Yeah, so the telomeres are in some ways a measure of our cellular aging, and the length of them can be related to aging. Now, I wish it were that simple. We did some work on telomere length actually in premature babies and to ask whether that was different. And it really is far more of a complicated story. And the more that people look, the more complicated it seems to get. So in the very early stages, that yes, indeed, the cloned animals were looking like they had shorter telomeres, and we thought that that was describing the or explaining the premature aging that Dolly had. But the more people looked, the more the waters got clouded. And I have to say, I don't have a definitive answer for you for that. And and I think the more people look again, the more clouded it will become until we get a handle on that. So yes, you're absolutely right to raise it, and it definitely is an issue. But a definitive answer, I think, is some way away.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's address the second issue I'd like to talk to you about: is it's really cloning or not? After a short break.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World programme. Today I'm talking with Professor Darren Griffin from the School of Biosciences at the University of Kent in the UK about the new cloning procedure that produced two long-tailed macaques that were born in December in China about 7 weeks ago, and the future of cloning in general. Now, Professor Griffin, you know, the other thing, of course, as you mentioned, as you talked about, well, what is the point in all this? And I guess behind all that, the first question would be, well, is it really cloning or not? Because if I understand it correctly, and I may well not have understood it correctly, but these sort of prompted embryonic cells are then transferred back into a womb, and the normal process of development carries on. But that means that the mother is different, isn't it? I mean, each mother is separate, individual. Now, that means that the baby, the young adult, is going to be affected by all sorts of other physiological, and I'm sure as well as psychological, inputs from the mother carrier, if you like. So they're not going to be identical, are they? Even if they may look the same, but they're not going to be the same.
Absolutely. So, yes, you raise a number of interesting issues there. The first thing to say, that the definition of a clone is an entity that is genetically identical from the original.
Yeah.
So by that definition, identical twins are clones, of course.
Yeah.
Now, the difference between identical twins and clones in which the context that we're talking about at the moment is the identical twins, by and large, were, of course, conceived at the same time. They were in the same womb, and almost without exception, they were brought up together. And then I think the third or fourth thing that is not always appreciated is they were brought up in the same point in history. Now, you and I can think back at the things that have shaped us and the way we are and how that was molded in some way by the political situation, how affluent or poor society was at the time, the place in which we lived, and how different that can be.
Yep.
Now, I sometimes use the example in my public lectures of, let's say tomorrow someone produced a Margaret Thatcher clone, and
I'm sorry, I didn't make any sound, I didn't make any noise, I'm listening to you quietly.
So let's say, being diplomatic, this is someone that delighted and infuriated people in equal measure, and I think if we can stay with that definition, let's say she affected the lives of an awful lot of people, I think we can certainly agree on that.
Agreed.
Now, the chances that a Margaret Thatcher clone would then have a similar effect, both in terms of its scope and in terms of its intensity, whether you are a fan or otherwise, that new clone would do something similar or more or less the same is madness, because they would be brought up in a different era. Ironically, they would be affected by their own actions. So I was a student in the 1980s, and that certainly informed an awful lot of my beliefs and so on. So I think that to be brought up in a different era with a different family in a different womb, and then the other thing is that the egg itself has its own little bit of DNA, the mitochondrial DNA, that would be different as well, and that's from the egg donor. So all of those things would be different. So clones, as we're describing them, would actually be fundamentally different from identical twins. And even identical twins, as well we know, are somewhat different, albeit similar, to one another.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting. And of course, the publications that came out after this event in December, the scientists claiming with great hurrah that the new technique will generate models, not just for genetically based brain diseases, they said, but also cancer, immune or metabolic disorders, and facilitate drug testing. But I mean, then the imagination, sort of my imagination anyway, very quickly eludes me to thinking that, well, what's to stop a rogue country or perhaps a rogue hospital, a group of scientists getting together, trying to clone human beings and using them as guinea pigs for eugenics-type experiments, you know, that would have some of the Nazis, you know, dribbling with glee at the opportunities.
Well, I think you raised two interesting points there. The first is that the rationale for doing this in primates at all is that there are certain human diseases for which primate research goes on. Now, some people are fundamentally opposed to that, and that is one very responsible point of view in many ways. And then the other side of the coin is that, well, it's 0.1 to 0.2% of all animal experimentation, and there are times when only primates will do. So as an interest, for example, the AIDS research, so research into HIV, was greatly advanced through the study of macaques. Cognitive aging, for instance, would be another example where it's thought that really you have to have a primate model.
Yeah.
Now, the reason for cloning in that context, and clones like the ones that we're seeing in the newspapers at the moment would be used for that, is that if you have a group of animals with the same genetic background and then you apply an intervention such as a drug, then you know for a fact that when that happens, the effect is due to your intervention and not to the natural population that might be in the monkeys that you look at.
Right.
So one argument is that would mean that you would have to use less monkeys than you would ordinarily, because your statistics would be more robust in doing it that way around.
Right.
So that is the rationale, and I'm not making a value judgment here. Some people are fundamentally opposed to any primate research. Some people think it's very necessary, but that is the rationale.
Yeah.
Now, the second point that you make there is, well, could there be a rogue state that goes on and does this?
Yeah.
Now, I think it's important to say that any scientific advance that has the potential to do good has the potential to do harm as well.
Sure.
And it's very hard to think of one that doesn't. And all that we can do is place international pressure on making sure that that doesn't happen within our own states and countries. We have regulatory bodies, so the Human Fertilization Embryology Authority in the UK, for instance, can regulate things within our own countries. Yes, of course it's a risk, but cloning is not unique in that case, and I think there are an awful lot of other things that you would argue were far more likely and far more dangerous.
Yeah, well, we've come to the end of our allotted time, unfortunately. I won't try and do my usual sort of resume and sum it all up, because there's too many arguments here. There's too many very, very deep and highly interesting subjects that you've talked about. And I hope it's been interesting for you, listeners. Certainly has been for me. I'd just like to thank you, Professor Griffin.
My pleasure.
From the School of Biosciences at the University of Kent, for joining us today. Listeners, please do tune in again next week. Goodbye.